Hey, I'm Jennifer Hurwitz, and welcome to Doing Relationships Right. Raw, authentic, and insightful, this podcast is a no-bullshit look at all things relationships. The good, the not-so-good, and the what-the-hell-was-that. No worries, I've gotcha, and we'll figure it all out together without taking ourselves too seriously here on Doing Relationships Right. Good morning, good morning. This is Doing Divorce Right or Avoiding It Altogether. I'm your host, Jennifer Hurwitz. I'm here every Tuesday. But of course, you can listen to me Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I don't care when you do it. It's awesome. Happy to be here. Happy to have you. I'm so excited today. So I've been kind of doing a little stalking, per usual, and finding you amazing guests, as always. And today, it's no exception. I have one of the most fantastic therapists with me. I've been stalking her myself, and she's pretty awesome. And I'm pretty excited because Dr. Alexandra Solomon is here today. And she is the author of, you guys just ready for this, she's the author of Taking Sexy Back, which I love, How to Own Your Sexuality and Create the Relationships You Want. I love it. And Loving Bravely. Oh, she has two books, right, Alexandra?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Two books. So you have not only Taking Sexy Back, but you also have Loving Bravely, which is your first book, 20 Lessons of Self-Discovery to Help You Get the Love You Want. Oh my God, I love that. I don't have that, but I don't have either of these books. I have to get them. She is a clinical assistant professor in the Department of Psychology at Northwestern University, that's like where my nephew wants to go, by the way, just so you know. Fantastic. And a licensed clinical psychologist at the Family Institute in Northwestern University, and a regular contributor at Psychology Today. You're fancy schmancy, Dr. Alexandra. How are you? Thank you for joining
me. I try to tell my husband and teens that all the time.
Well, I believe you. I think you're fancy schmancy. I'm very honored to have you today because Northwestern University is like, I mean, the creme de la creme. And if my son could go there, he would just die. It's amazing. Thank you for coming. How are you?
I'm good. It's so nice to be with you.
Oh, I love having you. Thank you. So let's talk about a lot of things. First of all, let's talk about how you started, what's happening, what's going on. And thank you for being here and tell us what's happened with your new book. It just came out in February, right?
It did. It did. And I love this book. So, you know, I feel like the first book was, you know, it was just this leap of faith. And I had done, you know, quite a bit. I think about myself as a woman on a bridge. I've always been bridging sort of the world of therapy and the general public, the world of academia and the general public. I love to translate what we do in sort of these like silos, you know, clinical therapy offices or classrooms, and translate it to the general public. And so writing a self-help book felt like the next step. And so that was Loving Bravely. And then I wasn't really, frankly, ready to write another book, and this book would not leave me alone.
Oh my God, so I love it. I love that.
At some point, you know, and I feel like I've heard artists describe that experience before, but having not really ever identified as an artist, I was like, what is this experience I'm having? And it just got to the point where it was more painful to resist the urge to write the book than to just sit down and get going. And so that's the place from which Taking Sexy Back was born. And it is, you know, it's kind of a flashy title for a book that's actually a really quiet, intimate journey for a woman into herself, into her soul, into her erotic self, and shifting from what I call an outside-in experience of her sexuality, which is the sum total of everything she has been told as a woman about what she should be and who she shouldn't be and what's right and what's wrong and what's sinful and what's dirty and what's not, to an inside-out experience where she's really tapping into her relationship with her erotic self, and that's the place from which really beautiful, healing, elevating sexual experiences come.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I cannot wait to read this book. And the cover is amazing too, because you're right. It does catch you as like this, like, right? It's like this hot, sexy book. But I think that's really great that it really is a lot more than that. It's deeper. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that is, it'd be quite off brand for me to put something out there that's like, okay, girls, you know, here's right. The latest, greatest sex move. It's just not, it's not me, right. but certainly, the whole process of understanding ourselves more deeply, that is completely on brand for me. And so that's really what this book is.
I think that's cool. Yeah. Cause I think a lot of us, you know, it is a little taboo. I mean, we don't sit around and, you know, and as women and say the things that I think we should talk more about it and more openly, don't you? Like, I feel like we talk about it, maybe we joke and we're we're kind of kitschy about it, but we don't really get serious with our friends and say, this is where I am, you know, like maybe this, right. This is what we need to do. Right.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. I had, and what I have found as a speaker and presenter is that once I'm in a speaking role, once I sort of like open the door,
yeah,
no going back. I had a recent experience of somebody had hired me to do a talk, and they really were like, so please just focus on your first book, and we really don't want you talking about your second book, right?
Why do you think that is? Because of the title?
Yeah, they just didn't want me talking about sex in their space, and so I was clear, fine, we won't have to. But you know what? I really didn't talk about sex at all, but I was talking about love and intimacy and connection. And when it came time for Q&A, the first hand that went up was a woman who wanted to talk about, you know, her sexuality,
yes,
in menopause, and how she kind of, and so I looked at the person who hired me, and I wanted to like sending her this message of like, I didn't know.
Like, it wasn't me.
It wasn't me, but I think that is there's something we crave authentic conversations about, and we don't, and that is whether it's with our girlfriends or with our intimate partners as well, right? Sex is something that is really challenging to talk about with the person that we are, person or people that we're having sex with, right? There's just a kind of vulnerability and nakedness that is sometimes harder than the act itself.
Right. No pun intended there. But yeah, why do you think like they are such difficult conversations? And my clients too, they're tough conversations to have with each other. And I feel like it's so funny that you say that, you know, talking about having people raise their hand and immediately talk about it happens to me too. But you did it. I'm going to brag about you. Your TED talk was fantastic. It really was great. And I love how you started by saying that you're nerdy. I love that. You're like, I'm really nerdy, but you do, you're beautiful, you know, beautiful, and you stand in front and you were so, it was captivating. Your TED talk was fantastic.
Thank you.
And you touched upon intimacy and that, you know, sex and intimacy, they're two different things. And, you know, I think that we forget that, you know, you can be intimate without having sex, right? And love and sex. And I just think it was fantastic. Bravo. That's great.
Thank you.
But yeah, so yeah, people do. They raise their hand and they want to talk about sex. And I think that you give them a space to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's great. Mm-hmm. It's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that we come by our fears and our silences really honestly, right? One of the places that I want readers to start in the new book is by really reflecting on the early messages they got about sex. Sure. Like, what was sex education like? How did your family talk about sex or not talk about sex? Like, what are those? It's not like we're consciously, you know, going to bed with our partner and thinking about eighth grade sex education. It's not like it's a conscious process, but it is that those early imprints, you know, they echo and they, I think, can set us up for just not having the tools to talk about sex. And I think there's also, especially when we're talking about in terms of talking with a partner, there are just deep fears of hurting our partners. Right.
You're so right. Mm-hmm. Cause we don't want to. And what do you suggest? I mean, I know that we could go all day about this, but I oftentimes say to myself, you know, I remember fifth grade sex education. I remember eighth grade sex education, but now when I have my teenage boys, you know, I'm really open about everything, but what are we supposed to, like, you know, how, I mean, I'm really open. So I just know what, you know, but what do, I never learned what to say. Like my parents never told me what to say to my kids, or I never, you know, where do you start? Right.
I mean, right. Well, in terms of parents with kids, I love the process of openness that you're describing conveys a message that sex is a part of life. And it is something that I think that really normalizes kids' curiosity. Cause I think if sexual curiosity isn't normalized, it becomes a space of shame.
I agree.
We know that the things we feel ashamed about are the things that we're most at risk of acting out about.
Right.
But I think this generation of parents, you know, you and I are at similar places in our parenting journey. I think what I'm hearing from the younger generation is that we as parents are doing a really nice job of talking about sex, but we get real, real, real focused on, like, to our boys, like, make sure you respect girls, which is essential and beautiful. And I love that we as parents are really forward with the consent message and the respect message. I also just want us, I'm really sensitive about not instilling in our boys a sense or a fear that their sexuality is somehow inherently dangerous or predatory. I think that men's sexuality actually deeply, deeply relational and deeply curious. I think we they internalize messages from media, from pornography.
I agree with you. My kids are actually scared. My boys have said that to me. My son said to me, "Mom, I don't even feel like I can make a first move without asking."
Right. That's right.
That's really scary, isn't it?
Yep. And I love, there's asking and then there's asking, right? I love the idea. I mean, the question, can I kiss you? I mean, for a teenage girl, like that's a really sexy question, right?
Yeah. My son said that. He's like, "I'm not going to, Mom, I have to ask her first." He does. Sure. He says, yeah. Yeah.
And that's beautiful. And I think we can give that message about where that kind of process of feedback is actually like, that's seduction. That's flirting. Yeah, that's how you build a sense of like,
yeah, I think
erotic
that's
tension and collaboration. Because when we teach boys that their sexuality is somehow inherently dangerous, what we're teaching our girls then is that their sexuality is somehow inherently passive. And then what do girls do with their rushes and surges of hormones and their desires to also kiss and touch and be touched? And I think that we do our girls a disservice when we don't normalize their curiosity and their eagerness, you know, and their ability to collaborate with a partner, whether it's a male partner or female partner, to collaborate and like create from the very beginning an experience that feels good to both people, you know?
Right. Oh my gosh, I love this conversation. I just do. So tell me something else. I think we're getting off track. I'm trying to keep, I'm sorry. I just think this is so amazing to me. So then when you're having these difficult conversations with your partner, how do you even switch? Like, I mean, I don't have a problem because like you, I'm just so open about it. But I know that I have girlfriends and clients who just have a really difficult time. Mm-hmm. Really difficult time talking about what they want, how they're feeling, why they're so, what do you suggest? Is your book goes there too? Is it helpful?
Yes.
Well, yes. Great.
So I think the first step oftentimes is that self inquiry, that self process, right? Because if I'm with a partner and my partner is asking me what I want, if I actually don't even know my own body, if I don't know how to, if I really have never given myself permission, because I grew up in a culture that didn't teach me to give myself permission to explore my own body, to understand how to follow a sensation in my body, I'm really not going to have an answer to give a partner, right? Like my partner could be deeply, deeply invested in my pleasure and really wanting to help me create an orgasm. But if I don't know my own anatomy, if I don't feel permission to be greedy, to be selfish, to put the spotlight on me, it's going to feel really threatening. And whatever I say to that partner is going to be in the service of quieting down what I read as their anxiety, right? Because sometimes, and then that's especially with heterosexual, when we're talking about a heterosexual dynamic, oftentimes, like I think that men sometimes come into a sexual experience with a woman feeling heavily responsible to give her an orgasm, right? So then that question is like, tell me what you want so that we can do something that will help me feel like I've done a good job. And then it just ends up feeling like a double twist of pressure and obligation to her. Right.
And you're so right, because not to get real personal, but my boyfriend does. He feels like it is his job. He's like, it is my job and I want to please you. And he's so, that's his job. Like he comes in, he's like, "Jen, this is it. And we're not going to bed until I'm like, whoa, easy, buddy." You know, like, and I'm like, "Babe, it's not your job. I got this. Like we can do this together. It's a team effort."
That's right.
Yes. I'm like, "We got this, baby. You know, like we can do this together." And he's just all about like, "Nope, we're gonna man up." And I'm like, in 3 years we've been together, and still to this day he's like, "Nobody goes to sleep until everybody, you know, we everybody done." Like, wow, okay. But it's funny how everybody just comes into relationship so differently, right? We have just perspectives, and you're right, from our childhood, like how we were, right, how we were raised. It's just, I love this conversation. Thank you, Alexandra.
I think that a male partner who is saying to his female partner what your boyfriend is saying is like, "Nobody sleeps till everyone has an orgasm." There's something really like beautiful and validating about that. I think that if a woman is hearing it as pressure, then it really might be that she, in her effort to be a team player, right? Like it's just that even if the message is delivered in the most like loving, adorable way, if she's reading it or coding it as pressure, that's going to shut down her orgasm, right?
Right.
She may actually just need some time and space where he is nowhere around to touch herself, right? To masturbate, to kind of like have that develop almost like a meditation, masturbation, like mindfulness practice of her own, you know? And then it's like, that's step one. And then step two is she can bring her partner back in, you know, or just whatever. Yeah. Whatever ways to kind of like flip that narrative that somehow her orgasm is an obligation she has to him or whatever, that's the script that needs to get, broken up. And for her to, in the book, we work on like, what are the constraints to sort of like mindfulness and abandon and presence in the bedroom. And sometimes it's things like body image challenges, right? Like you know, which again, we come by honestly, there are entire economies that will collapse if we as women decide that we're done worrying about, you know, whatever, the state of our thighs.
Because I mean, I'm in this quarantine and I'm like, I can't stop eating, right? And I'm like 5 pounds heavier. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even imagine. Like, and it's totally true. Like, I don't even feel sexy. Right. So like the thought of it, I'm like, oh my gosh, I think to myself, do I even want to get naked? I mean, I totally get that. Right.
That's right. That's right. And even if we are, you know, lucky enough to have a partner who does not care.
And like, he doesn't care, but I do.
Mm-hmm, right. Right. And that is, it's really hard to take the message to like, you know, if we've got this tape playing all day long of like, stop eating and you're gaining weight and da da da, it's that tape is not necessarily going to stop in the bedroom. So
it doesn't. I wish it would.
I know. Well, and then, I know. No,
it's hard. And I feel like that's a lot of my friends and my clients too, were all, and I actually have friends that, you know, have said to me, and I know women who have never even had an orgasm. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, this is like your book. I feel like I want to just buy a dozen of copies of your book and just have it around. That's why people need you. Like, you're just doing such a great, thank you for being on my show, because women are, you know, it's embarrassing and it's hard a conversation to have, and nobody wants to, I mean, people don't want to have it, and they stay in marriages where they're just unfulfilled and they don't know what to do. Right. Right. I mean, it's hard. It's really, really hard.
Well, and I think that, you know, sex is so fraught. I think it's hard. Even women who have, you know, really like reliable orgasms and really deeply enjoy having sex, when they have it, they can still struggle with libido and sex drive because oftentimes it's that role strain, right? Like, it's very, very challenging to be a domestic goddess or a worker out in the world or a parent and to take those roles off and put the role of lover on. And that is, that process can be more laborious and complicated for a woman than for a man sometimes, not always, certainly. But then if when she does go to bed with her partner, if she really doesn't have orgasms or doesn't really feel good, or it just feels like more pressure, then there's not even an inherent motivation, right? Sometimes if a woman is struggling with her sexual desire, sometimes she can say to herself, okay, I know that once we get started, it's going to feel great. I know I'm going to sleep better, like whatever. Then that can kind of help get over the hump, right? Of like, you know, of the, whatever those like mental barriers are of like, I'm so tired, or I've gained 5 pounds, or, you know, I've been a mother all day. It's really hard to switch to a lover.
Right.
If she can at least say, it's going to feel great, I'm going to feel so glad once we do, that can help with that process.
Right. And sometimes physically, but even though mentally you can get there, sometimes physically your body doesn't respond.
Sure.
Right. So then I can remember when I was thinking, my poor husband here, but I mean, when I was married, I'd be like, oh God, please, please. I can do this. And I remember being like, why is my body, my mind is here, my body's not clicking. I've got to make this happen. And then we would have sex and I'd be done to be like, wait, that was really great. I'd be like, why don't we do that more often? And he would look at me and be like, why don't we do that more often? Then we go another 6 months. It was like, something wasn't, you know, and then we were divorced. But like, you know, it's just, I feel like if everyone could just, it's just so hard. It's just so, it's no pun intended again, but it's just difficult, right?
It's just difficult. Yeah. Stumble into all the puns.
Right. Right. All the puns. There we go. Right. This is so fun. But and I say to my boyfriend all the time, I'm like, we have a great sexual relationship, but we fight all the time. And I'm like, why can't we do that? And you know, why we can't, we just can't get it right. But you know, it's like, it is what it is.
Well, those are just the endless paradoxes that,
right.
that we live with in our intimate relationships, right?
Yeah,
and it's it's just even to hear you say that is it's so validating around just like kind of embracing the imperfections of all
yeah.
of it and,
yeah.
and knowing that with this partner, you'd have these set of challenges, with this partner, you'd have these set of challenges. And
yeah,
I think that the more a couple can just like have a sense of togetherness, maybe sometimes even like a bit of a sense of humor about, you know, oh my gosh, we're in such a dry spell right now, or this yeah. is so pathetic. You know, that's hugely helpful, because what happens sometimes or often is that if there is like a sexual dry spell or a mismatch in, you know, how often one partner wants it versus another partner, which is
yes,
so,
right.
so common.
Right, so common.
Yeah. What happens is we get into a finger pointing stance mm-hmm. of you want it too much. No, you don't want it enough. Or we get into a shame stance of like, what's wrong with me that I'm craving so much sex? Or what's wrong with me that I don't want sex more than I do? And when shame and blame take over, we are just lost to each other. And that's going to cut off that kind of like validating collaborative conversation where two people can say together, like, oh my gosh, we are having a really hard time here. You
right.
know?
Right. I do that sometimes. I have to be honest. I'm, this is like true confessions. I do sometimes. I'm like, okay, well, I really want it and he doesn't. What's wrong with me? Like, am I kind of like slutty? Like, what's going on here? I'm like, why do I always? And then I'm like, I'll look at him. I'm like, you know, why are you going to sleep right now? Like, hello, I'm here. Like, what's wrong with me? You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. And you're right. That's such the blame shame thing. Like, I feel like what kind of woman wants it more than her guy? Right? But like, mm-hmm. he's like, Jen, I'm just tired. I'm like, okay, well, all right.
Yep. What's so amazing is this earlier this year, the first book ever about men's, a researcher, Sarah Murray, has been talking to men about their libido, their sex drive, and finding that a lot of men report that they want it less than their female partners or want it less than their partners. And that there is a challenge there is that it confronts this sort of like very narrow patriarchal script we have, which is the story we've been told is that men want, you know, men love sex, men need sex, women can take it or leave it. That's the story we've been told. So that has been the lens through which research has taken Absolutely. Place.
Yeah.
You know, I think that lens, that story starts to like creep into our own experiences. So a man who's struggling with his libido has the added layer of shame of somehow, does that mean I'm not man enough, or somehow I'm... Oh. You know, and then her partner, if the partner is a woman, then can feel like what's wrong, like what you're saying, what's wrong with me? Why am I not hot enough? Am I losing my edge? Whatever. So it's so tragic that we like take these
absolutely
really narrow, rigid gender stories into a situation that makes like a hard thing harder. You know, it's
but
hard enough.
Where they came from, like where did they start?
Right.
Like, who made these up in the first, like, where did they come from in the first place? Right. Like mm-hmm. just so interesting to me, this whole conversation, because it just, where did it come from? Like, I wish someone would just have stopped a long time ago. You know,
like, that's right. That's right. Well, and it's hard because I think we perpetuate the cycle in these very sneaky ways, right? It's so much the air we breathe that I think we probably all have a hand in perpetuating it, even when we don't know. Like, I love when my students, you know, this is one of the blessings of teaching at Northwestern. Like, my students will, you know, put a hand up and like be like, you know, that's really kind of stereotypical of you. And so even though I have, you know, not one but two gender studies degrees, an undergraduate one and an advanced degree, you know, I'm still expanding my awareness of this stuff. And the next generation can see stuff and hear stuff in my language that, you know, that I miss, that is assumptive. And so I think that we're all like works in progress around like shedding these messages that are just, I mean, they're old, you know, thousands of years old. This patriarchal gender stuff is old.
I would love to take one of your classes. I just would love it. I think, I mean, I took, you know, human sexuality at Michigan State University, which doesn't even come close to Northwestern. For God's sakes. Yeah, I actually taught like human sexuality 445. I think like I was a TA or something in 1920. But it cracks me up because I'm like, Northwestern. I'm like, oh, like my kids are going to die when I tell them that you were on my show. They're just going to be like, what do you mean?
My whole family is on Michigan State grads and my niece is there now. So
I can't badmouth them. What do you mean? Are they really at Michigan State?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fantastic.
My brother went there. My mom and dad met there.
Come on.
Deep really? Love for the Spartans.
Even oh, okay. Well, I feel better now because my entire family went to University of Michigan.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm the only one that went to Michigan State in my family. They're like maize and blue. And even my kids like won't even talk to me.
That's
like,
so great. Funny. I'm the opposite. I'm the only one who went to Michigan.
Oh my, did you go to Michigan?
I did. Uh-huh.
Wait a minute. Stop it right now. Did you really? When did you? Will you tell me when you graduated?
91 to 95. I graduated in 95.
Same as me. Okay, I graduated in 94. So you were there with my ex-husband and my whole family.
Oh, that's so...
This is amazing. We have to chit-chat after. I had no idea you went to Michigan. I probably wouldn't have had... I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right.
At least you didn't go to Ohio State. That's okay. Mm-hmm. We're okay. As long as you didn't go to Ohio State. Just kidding, listeners.
Right.
Just kidding about that. Oh, I love that you went to Michigan. That's amazing. Amazing. So I was born and raised in Detroit. So,
yes, me too.
Excited. That's amazing. I had no idea. Okay, good. There we go. Oh, I love this. This has been a great show. Okay, so wait a minute. So let's go back really quickly. And everybody needs to go. I'm actually going to go on Amazon. Isn't it on Amazon right now? It's everywhere, the book, right?
It is. You know, Amazon is shipping really slowly because of the
global... Right, so let's not get it there.
You can do Barnes & Noble is shipping a little bit quicker. And then also the publisher, New Harbinger. And New Harbinger has a 25% off coupon right now for all of their books.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's a good time to order, one or both books directly from New Harbinger.
Okay. So let's do that. So we're going to put the link to, we're going to get the link from you for New Harbinger, I'll get it. And then, so Amazon, New Harbinger, and Barnes & Noble, and I'm going to get both of them. I'm going to read them both. So Taking Sexy Back, How to Own Your Sexuality and Create Relationships You Want. And then the other one is Loving Bravely, 20 Lessons of Self-Discovery to Help You Get the Love You Want. I am thrilled. This has been amazing. Do we leave anything out? Oh, wait, you have a new program. Let's talk about that really quickly before you go.
All right.
Your new program. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this was really fun. I'm very just really proud of this project. So it's an e-course. So it's for an e-course for clinicians and for coaches. So there's continuing education, credits available for therapists. So it's an e-course through Psychotherapy Networker and through PESI, PESI, which is one of the big continuing education providers for mental health. And it's a course for called Loving Bravely, helping clients who are single, dating, and single again. And it's
so I can so take this
much. Yeah. And it's a ton of content. It's 8 modules, additional materials, handouts, interviews with clinicians in the field. It's really a pretty profound value.
I'm going to take it. I can take it, right?
I would love for you to take it.
Oh, I'm going to take it. And that sounds amazing to me. And if you're teaching it, are you teaching?
I'm teaching it. Yeah. I teach it the whole, it's my course.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. That's amazing. I'm going to take it. That's all there is to it. Okay. So this is fantastic. I'm going to get all your links. I loved having you. I think you're brilliant and smart, and everybody watches TED Talk, and your TED Talk is called...
It is called Relational Self-Awareness, The Secret to Modern Love.
Yes. It was really, really good. And you're wearing a pretty red dress. Everybody look for a great red dress. It was fabulous, right? You're wearing red. Right?
I was wearing red on the red circle. Mm-hmm.
Yes, red on the red. I loved it. I already had my outfit picked out. Oh, so sad, everybody.
I cannot wait for you. I mean, it'll happen. It'll happen and it'll be wonderful.
I hope so. They have a reschedule for October 9th, but I don't know. I don't think they're going to do it.
It's such a bummer. I'm so sorry that happened.
That's okay. At least I didn't memorize the whole thing.
That part's brutal.
It's brutal. Okay, Dr. Alexandra, I loved having you. Thank you so much for being here.
So good to be with you, Jen.
Oh, so nice. So everybody, do me a favor, go to the show notes and get these books, both of them, Taking Sexy Back and Loving Bravely. I loved having you. Thank you, Dr. Solomon. Everybody else, do what you got to do. Do something fabulous today. Go outside, go for a walk. Do some online yoga, do some meditation, have a cookie. I don't know, make yourself happy. And as usual, you know what to do with me. Find me at www.jenniferhurvitz.com or Jennifer Hurvitz Biz all over the place. And you know what to do. Peace, love, and truth, everybody. Be good, be happy, and be safe. Bye. Hey, hey, thanks for listening to Doing Relationships Right. Don't forget, if you love the show, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast episodes. And grab my books, One Happy Divorce and Woulda, Coulda, Shoulda, on Amazon, Target.com, or my website, JenniferHurvitz.com. As usual, thanks for listening and see you next week. Peace, love, and truth.